Against the Grain. You're on with Roz Zethiki, my man Teo Hardiman. There's a lot going on in the news this week. I mean, if you've been under a rock, you might not know about some of the changes that have happened to our democracy. We have stuff going on in D.C. We have stuff closer to home. But I thought, Teo, maybe we'd step back. I've never played the game backgammon. Have you? I've heard the word. Never heard the word.
I've never played the game. I used to shoot dice.
So then, you know what? Let's take a step back and get at what we know how to get about. And that's dissecting these issues and talking about really what's going on in the country. Last week, Teo, with everything that happened, what are, say, two of the things that really stuck out in your mind as something that we need to talk about as a society, as a culture, on this radio show, where you can join us by calling 773-763-9278? What are two of the things that struck you, Teo?
We really need to talk about the divide here in the United States of America. It shouldn't be that way. We should be one nation. All together, number one, we should be one nation sincerely. And this might sound crazy, but the people that rioted and looted the U.S. Capitol, you know, it was, we found out later they left urine and feces all on in the state capitol. Man, who does that? You know, I mean, that was a low blow. I mean, a real low blow. So not a lot of people are being arrested now. You know, they're losing their jobs. And I don't understand how a sitting president would actually push forth. That's what you call treason. OK, so we should talk about invoking the 25th Amendment, number one, treason, and how we can heal. We need to heal in America right now. African-American people only represent about 13% of the U.S. population. And it seems like everybody's like pointing fingers at African-American people. For what? What have we done to everybody? You know, I mean, real talk. What have we done? Because it's all coming down to this color thing, but we should be one nation. I mean, our forefathers fought for us to be one people. And there's a lot of good Americans out here that love and respect all of humanity. So it's time for us, in my opinion, to just stop all this bickering and just become one people. Man, you got good white people out here, good black people, good Asian people. You got good Latino people. Why can't we just be one good people?
You know, what really struck me, too, is there's that discussion of dichotomy, right? You have Black Lives Matter and you have the protests in D.C. We're treated very differently than this round of protests that were coming. And that's something that we want to discuss, too. We have a guest that we've brought on to help us with this discussion. And that's Mike Childress, who is the president of the DuPage NAACP. And we want you to kind of weigh in as well as to what you've seen happen. How it's kind of exasperated, because all of these start at a local level and then they exasperate to what we see at a national level. Tell us about some of the challenges that you have addressed in DuPage County. What are some of the injustices that you've seen? How have you worked to rectify them? How have you built an infrastructure in DuPage County?
Well, one of the things we've done is tried to partner with the local officials, the elected officials, but we also want to educate our constituents on the issues. We don't, first of all, one of the things that irritates me is that our parishioners, our pastors and preachers allow public officials to come to their churches to actually sit in the pulpit and then turn around and not hold their feet to the fire. One of the prime examples is, you know, I applaud my brother Warnock in Atlanta, but he also allowed his opponent to come to his church and sit in the pulpit with him, listen to his sermon, and then turn around and use the sermon against him. Those things have to stop. You know, we have to be able to hold all the elected officials accountable. You know, we at the NAACP are not, we're nonpartisan. We don't back Democrats or Republicans. Here's what I say. We don't have any permanent friends. We don't have any permanent enemies. What we have is permanent issues. And those issues don't change. You know, we still want health care. We still want affordable housing. We need food. We need jobs. And those issues don't change no matter whether you're an R or a D.
All right.
So we communicate with all parties and all elected officials. We hold candidate forums. And we give them a platform to speak their ideas. Once we do that, we as a organization go back and we talk about and analyze the dialogue that we got.
All right.
And then we turn around and we educate the voters on how to be how to be intelligent voters.
Let me ask you this. You're mm-hmm. in DuPage County. Obviously, the African-American community is a small subset of DuPage County. How receptive do you find the institutions out there? How receptive do you find the people out there, people willing to learn about your issues? Mm-hmm. Or is everyone so involved in their own world that, hey, you know what, that's a good issue, but I got to worry about this? Or do you find that you are able to effectuate that conversation, discussion when you have these candidate forums, when you have these seminars? Do you find it's well attended by the community? Do you find a reciprocal agreement? And how have you been able to overcome any challenges that you have not been able to?
We're starting to get more visibility, and we're getting a well-attended candidate forums.
Okay.
What has happened in my frustration is election time comes.
Mm.
And you go down and you see the senators and you see the president, and everybody knows them.
Right.
But then you get to the bottom of the ballot and you see a list of about 7 or 8 judges. And nobody knows who these guys are. They don't know what they stand for, anything. So either you pick out a name you like and you vote for it, or you don't vote for them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to understand that those guys will be promoted to circuit, to appellate, and maybe one day on the Supreme Court. And you don't know anything about them, and they came from your neighborhoods.
Yes,
and what has happened, we found, is that the conservative movement has built, they spent 30 or 40 years building their bench strength. Mm. And what is now happening is we're playing catch up as progressives. And again, I kind of like that word progressive, because it doesn't indicate a party. It indicates progressive ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're seeking out.
Okay.
So we've had candidate forums, for example, for the judges. We had about 14 judges that actually attended.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And maybe even more. It was either 14, 18, something to that effect. And the community all came out and got to ask their questions. And many of those constituents walked away knowing the candidates, understanding the candidates, and having a better feel for when they walk into that booth to vote.
You know, Tito, there's something you don't think about, right? It's like that old magic trick, watch my hand over here, meanwhile something's happening over here. You always think about, again, almost every position except for the judiciary, where really a lot of recidivism, right? We always talk about anti-recidivism.
Oh,
we always talk about justice on the streets. And again, these are the people, I didn't even think about it. They're building their bench, building their strength, and there's certain power allocations that no one's even watching. Because again, it's I guess in Illinois it is a partisan, whether you are a judge, Republican or Democrat, but really, why should a judge be either, right? I mean, you're out there, you're supposed to be making decisions on law. Maybe what's more important is not are you the R or are you the D, but what do you really stand for, and what is really your thought process when it comes to justice for people at different economic levels?
Well, you know, basically, you know, I ran for governor before myself, you know, a couple of times, and I did real good back in 2014. I captured 30% of the state vote. It was a little harder in 2018 because I ran against J.B. Pritzker. You know, he spent $170 million. And you had Chris Kennedy and Senator Biss. They ran. So I'm good friends with Kennedy and State Senator Biss now. J.B., we okay. You just put it like that, you know, because I met with him a couple of times. But if you don't mind, let's bring on the first caller.
We have Clyde. Clyde, you're on with T.O. Hardiman, Raza Siddiqui on Against the Grain.
Yeah, Brother Clyde, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? How's everything?
Everything's okay.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
We had a tremendous week here in the United States. All the way from Kenosha to Washington, D.C.
Sounds to me that in Kenosha, things didn't go exactly how many people hoped for, right? I mean, there was a lot of discussion as to the power base in terms of police not being held up to the accountable standards that some felt they deserved to. So how do you see that as a victory or something positive in our communities?
I don't see it as no victory. I see it as a delay in the judicial system. What happened was when Trump came to Kenosha, he gave them the farewell that this is how it's going to be. At the same day that they made this announcement was the same day that Kyle Rittenhouse went to court, and he got off. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, he ain't got off, but he went in and made his plea. All this is in the same day. Then right after that, we did 2 days of protesting down there in Kenosha. Asked that they change the state's attorney's decision. That's when they go up in the Capitol and the president sends them to the Capitol.
Okay.
I mean, this week has just been really, 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 really bad.
Well, Clyde, what are your initial thoughts about what happened at the U.S. Capitol? What are your thoughts there?
Well, T.O., I'm going to tell you like this here. I ain't mad because I knew it was going to happen.
Okay.
Are you mad?
Well, no, you know, I knew it was going to happen as well. It didn't surprise me at all.
I'm not mad at them. It really showed who they are. What I'm really upset about right now, I've been looking at social media, and they're already giving them plea bargains and apologies. People are losing their jobs and stuff, and they want to apologize. One guy, the guy that walked out with Nancy Pelosi's, some of her stuff, he said it was a bad decision.
Okay.
You're a grown man. You're a grown man. Now, it was a bad decision that you got caught.
Didn't one of the other guys who had his feet up on her desk say that he thought he was going into the bathroom?
Right.
I mean,
they playing
I was in his 60s and can't find the little symbols up there. But again, Teal, you were talking about you weren't surprised.
No. Well, see, you got to understand, Donald Trump comes from the talk, you know, the show, The Apprentice, right, where he was firing everybody. And I mention that because Donald Trump is a showman. You know, he's into entertainment business. He pulls stunts. On the streets of Chicago, we call it pull stunts. Mm. And that's what he did. He pulled off a stunt, and he's a president. He should have been thinking on a higher level. This guy is a sore loser. He doesn't want to go down in defeat, so he's going to do anything and any and everything in his power to try to throw a rock and hide his hand. Nobody ever took over the U.S. Capitol like that since the early 1800s, Raza, you know. Now, this is just crazy. I just think if they would invoke the 25th Amendment and then the members of Congress draft up the paperwork for his impeachment and then the Secret Service, they need to escort him to the gates of the White House and then just put him out on the street over there and tell him to go on about his business, because he has been dead wrong as far as the way he's leading the country in his at the end of his, you know, administration. He's dead wrong. So, baby, you might want to weigh in on it, brother.
I'm willing to bet you.
Yeah.
Tio, I'm willing to bet you that before he leaves, he's going to pardon every one of them people that's been arrested that was out there.
Okay, understood. Understood. So what are your thoughts on it, Brother Chilton?
This is a culmination of everything that he's been preaching since he's been there. I personally believe, A, I was not surprised, but B, I personally believe it was planned and it was organized. It was not a spontaneous combustion that happened at the doors of the Capitol building. Guys came in with tie wraps. Okay. This guy has been advocating getting the squad. I don't have any doubt that they were going to go after Maxine Waters. I don't have any doubt that he was going to go after Jim Clyburn. He has even said his office is very secure, and they knew exactly where to go. They were going after Ilhan Omar. They were going after all of the squad, and they knew they were in the same place at the same time. Mm-hmm. And all of the sudden, they want to make us believe that this was all spontaneous. You know, he and then he gives this huge speech about what we're going to do. His son says what we're going to do. We're going to fight and we're going to do all these things. And then they slink out the back door and allow the mob to go do it. We've seen this long before. Again, as like I said prior to the show, this is how the NAACP was formed. There was race riots all throughout the country. And the NAACP started because of the Springfield race riots.
Give us a little history. Just kind of give us a little bit about how it started and how the organization started, and then how you got into it, what your passion was.
What started the whole thing was in 1908, a white woman claimed two black kids raped her. And they, the sheriff knew this was not true. So they, he arrested the two black kids and he whisked them away over to Bloomington Normal. By that time, the crowd got excited, liquored up, drunk, and as mobs do, they were going to go in and lynch the black people, the black kids, and but they weren't there. So now what do you do? Mm-hmm. They started breaking in homes and tearing down things, urinating, feces, the whole nine, just rioted. And I always get a kick out of it. They call it a race riot, but you can't hardly call it a race riot when the only one that's dying are black people. Mm-hmm. So the only white person that got, I think, that got killed was the white person that was hiding blacks in their house.
Wow. That's it. That's
and else. Then to make it where the media becomes either your ally or your enemy, they went in and wiped out every piece of history on that race riot. They've just started uncovering artifacts in Springfield. Okay. They uncovered the whole neighborhood, and it's being resurrected. Our president and our state president, Teresa Haley, has done research on the race riots in Springfield. Hmm. 1 year later, the NAACP was formed by liberal whites and blacks, and it was all about anti-lynching. But now it's our North Star, civil rights, voting rights. We feel that the one single place that everybody's equal is in that voting booth. And we have to get out there and vote. We
That's
have
some good
to,
information.
Yeah. We have to use that power, because if you don't, you'll never be counted. I like to say that if your vote wasn't important, why would they go to so much effort to keep you away from that voting booth? That's what
you can see the power to vote. What happened in Georgia recently?
Exactly.
You see the power. So before we, I want to just go back to Clyde for a minute because he's the president of Black Lives Matter in Lake County. Then we have another caller. So Clyde, what are the next steps? What do you think the next steps should be in regards to what's going on to try to help heal America? Put it like that. You think we are in a process now where we can begin to work on a healing process, Brother Clyde?
Do you think so? Proud Boys already, this was last month. I was in Florida. I met one of the Proud Boys. I also do a research. I met one of the Proud Boys. I talked to him, and he told me next month, y'all watch out.
Oh, really?
Now.
Next month, meaning January?
He told me that was in December. He said next month, y'all watch out.
Okay.
So we already knew what was going on. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew something was tremendous that was getting ready to hit this country with these Proud Boys. Can we mend this? I can't give you the answer on that. We're too busy trying to seek justice for black and brown people. You know, that's the main thing. We need justice for black and brown people. Too many, I'm headed to Florida next week. Got like I said, I was there about the little boy that got shot getting off of work, 18 years old from McDonald's. They smelled marijuana and shot him 35 times.
Wow.
Then tried to say he committed suicide. This is all over the country.
But did he shoot himself 35 times? Talking about he committed suicide.
Wait a minute. That's what they say. You know, you got the governor of Florida right now want to use what happened in the Capitol to say, because you know Florida is an open carry state, and that if they think you're getting ready to go inside a building or anything, they can shoot. Residents can shoot to kill.
Okay.
He want to enhance the. So all this is going on is all over the news where the governor of Florida wants to bring this law in. They're not through.
Okay.
It's not over with.
Gotcha.
When Black Lives Matter, when we was in Washington, D.C., the whole Capitol was surrounded by National Guards.
Yep.
And we was peaceful. We was peaceful. The whole, you couldn't get in and take a picture. You couldn't do nothing. When our families came out there. Even when Minister Farrakhan had the Million Man March, the whole Capitol was surrounded by National Guards.
And you know what? I think that is, again, this disparate treatment is something that we need to explore. We need to hit this commercial break. But something else I want to talk about is the economic disparity, right? Tio, I've seen you talk about this. I've seen you talk about the legalized marijuana and how it's being disproportionately spread out, the licenses, even in black communities where there are certain requirements or certain state requirements that these should be economic advantages within the community. And this is something we want to continue to talk about as we come back from these commercial breaks. Yeah. You can reach us at 773-763-9278. And hold on first, Marcus. We'll get to you right after this. You're on with Keo Hardiman and Raza Siddiqui on Against the Grain.
Okay, buddy. Yeah, thank you all for tuning in.
The minority groups in America are severely affected by COVID-19 due to health care and economic inequities. Chicago, now it's your time to make a difference in your community and join the fight against this global pandemic. Loretto Hospital, in partnership with Affinity Health, are seeking healthy volunteers to find a potential COVID-19 vaccine. Interested participants can call 877-L-TRIALS or visit chicagocovidvaccine.com to learn more.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
33 Realty is a fully integrated real estate services firm specializing in investment brokerage, property management, leasing, distressed real estate services, and construction services via its sister company, Cubed Construction, for a variety of asset classes across the multifamily and commercial real estate sectors. 33 Realty provides full-service solutions to complex real estate assignments with industry-leading staff invested in the process. For more information, please visit 33realty.com. 33 Realty, your foundation for real estate success.
You're listening to Against the Grain with Tio Hardiman and Raza Siddiqui. We're on with Michael Childress, the president of the DuPage NAACP. We're talking about kind of not only this disparity, kind of what we've seen with the Capitol in the last week, but the underlying kind of arch that's always been there, and that's the economic, not only disenfranchisement, but also the disparity between these two groups and how we're going to overcome this. You actually brought up something, Mike, that I thought was fairly interesting, that sometimes the media has been complacent in not keeping the history. You look at the Tulsa, Oklahoma race riots. You look at the fact that in a lot of public school textbooks, this wasn't even mentioned. This came about recently where people have discovered what happened there, where Black Wall Street was physically bombed and decimated, something that where independence was being created in the African-American community. I mean, how do you contend that this is something that's happened throughout the country and that we are ready or going to be able to change this?
Well, one of the things, and I've had conversations with ministers out in DuPage County, and there are white people out there that recognize that this is a problem and has historically been a problem. I've met some ministers and I've actually had talks at churches on what can white people do to fight racism in their community. And I think what we're doing is we're missing a big piece of it all. Mm-hmm. People say, well, we need more racial sensitivity classes, culturally biased classes. You know, all of those things are important. Black history is good. You know, to me, it's kind of a sanitized version. We like to teach of all of our achievements, which we should.
Yeah.
But the big piece that I say is missing until it is taught in this country, the atrocities that have been heaped on people of color since this country has been here, you know, the Tulsa's, like you said, now that the we're coming up on 100th year anniversary of that Tulsa race riot.
Mm-hmm.
1919, I know it was 1921, May of 1921. We're coming up on May of 2021.
Gotcha. That's important.
And, right. And if you go back now and look at the economics of that, Tulsa was the most affluent community, white or black, in the nation. Now it's one of the poorest. 100 years after that, there's still the unemployment rate of Tulsa is sitting some of black unemployment is sitting around 65-70%. That's huge. You know, the disparate in economic power is gone. And that just is just one instance because we can talk about it. But again, there's Springfield, there's St. Louis, there's the Chicago race riots, New York race riots. Race riots have been a issue throughout the country. And then you turn around and you see what was happening in Washington. It just is another piece. It's just a mosaic of this country when it comes to race relations.
So, yeah, what we want to do now, let's bring Brother Marcus on the line because we got a few callers waiting for us. Brother Marcus. How you doing, Marcus?
Hey, I'm doing great, Teal. Thanks for inviting me on, man. I got a lot to say, but I'm going to try to restrain myself.
Oh, no, speak your mind. We appreciate you hanging in there for a little while. You know, we're open for the discussion.
You know, so about the incidents of last week, my first at the Capitol, my first thought is that that was not a moment. That was the beginning of an extension, a surge of a movement that's been going on for over 150 years. We haven't seen anything like that since the election of Lincoln. Okay, and that is the underlying thing that's going on here. And what that fuss was about was whether or not this is going to be an inclusive nation of all people or a white nation that tolerates some people. And that fight is still on the table, ergo MAGA, Make America Great Again. 72 million people voted for that.
To you, I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to talk about building the own infrastructure, right? Like you had Robert Abbott, who had the Chicago Defender, one of the premier newspapers, chronicling and documenting, giving historical fact to the African American community that no longer exists. I mean, it's now maybe on a website. It's not in print anymore.
Not like it used to be, right?
Not like it used to be. Not this infrastructure that you once had. You talk about the economic opportunities that these communities can have with legalization of marijuana that they just are not getting. I know that's something
you talked about it. So what everybody needs to know here in Illinois is that in Chicago, we still, to date, we do not have one African-American on recreational marijuana dispensary in Chicago to date. In the year 2020, $1 billion was made on recreational marijuana. We have elected officials that ran on a campaign promise of inclusion and equity and equality, but we still are at the bottom of the line, you know, at the back of the line when it comes down to respecting the voters who voted you in office. It makes no sense. They have a lottery where the lottery was rigged as well, where you have people that from, you know, everywhere else, they have more chances in the lottery than some of the African-American owners who would not win the lottery. And then also it was stated by another African-American official, I won't say the name because it's public information, you can look it up, that they were going to consider African-American business owners in the second round. They don't consider us in the second round when they want our votes.
Right.
We're in the first round. We're a priority, okay? But now we're talking about the second round. So go ahead, Marcus.
That textbook example of structural racism.
Yeah.
It's set up rule-wise, you know, administrative rules, laws, and institutions are designed around keeping certain, reserving certain powers to certain people and resisting the involvement of others in those same set of powers. That's structural racism, same as gentrification and anything else like it.
Yes. Well, Marcus, we want to thank you for your call, okay, bro? Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, man. Take care.
Okay.
We got Caroline waiting as well. Let's get to her, Caroline.
Carolyn on the line. Miss Caroline, how you doing, young lady?
Hey, Theo, how you doing? This is Carolyn Ruff, and actually, I called in to talk a little bit about the election that took place in Georgia.
Okay.
It made me feel like we have hope because of the two candidates that won the election, Black Lives Matter, Women of Faith. We went down and we worked the 2 weeks that we went to door to door, knocking on doors, reminding people to get the votes out. And we were able to join the Democratic Party to do all of this. And I thank them for allowing us to be part of their space to get these two candidates out. And it's very important that they won. And also, we're Black Lives Matter Women of Faith. We're having a march. Now, don't get it twisted with the march on tomorrow. Our march is January 16th. That's Martin Luther King's weekend. And it's going to be at the Federal Building, 230 South Dearborn, Chicago. Starts at 11:30, from 11:30 to 3:30. We're asking every woman, children, millennials to please come on out and join us. This is Martin Luther King's weekend. I'm pretty sure Congressman John Lewis is looking down on the women because we are the women that's rising. We are the women that's making things happen. We put the president in, Harris in. Now we put the two senators in, and they're going to make things happen. And I could see the two of them being the president of the United States in 2024.
Okay, good stuff. So you say you have a march on January 16th, right? And what time does it start?
It starts at 11:30 at the Federal Building, 230 South Dearborn, and this Saturday, January 16th.
Okay. Well, keep up the good work, Carolyn Ruff. We appreciate you going to Georgia, you know, representing on behalf of women nationwide, which is very important. We commend the work of Black Lives Matter, Women of Faith, and all the good work that's being done. So last but not least, Carolyn, before you get out of here, because we have a few other calls and our guests here. So when you were in Georgia, do you think that things are going to change in Georgia? Because I have family members in Atlanta, Columbus, Georgia, some parts of the Georgia area, but I know there's a lot of poverty in the state of Georgia for African-American people. But do you think it's going to lead to any real changes in Georgia and across our nation? What are your thoughts?
I truly believe that it's going to be a big change in Georgia because they have some of the most powerful people working to make changes in Georgia. And Reverend Dr. Raphael, John Ossoff, these are two powerful men that won those two Senate seats. And with that being said, the Democratic Party is in control now because Harris is the tiebreaker.
Okay.
So big things are going to happen, sir. Just stay tuned. Keep the faith. Big things are going to happen. This is our time.
Okay, Carolyn. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Brother Raza, that's a good conversation, so we just keep it going.
No, absolutely. I think one of the fundamental things she brought upon was kind of the grassroots mobilization for certain situations like this. I mean, it was very close in Georgia, right? It was a nail-biter, but again, people were on the streets making sure that they got out there, got the last-minute votes in. In terms of what you do with the NAACP, especially out in DuPage, what is your role when it comes to the mobilization of voter registration drives to kind of counteract any disenfranchisement that might come and make sure that education is spread within, for instance, DuPage County, which for all our listeners out of the kind of nine county area has predominantly been a very red county and is slowly seeming to not only change, but has changed. The DuPage County government has gone from a red government to a blue at the county level. What's added to this?
Well, from the NAACP's point of view, I want to give a quick shout out to our political action chair. His name is Patrick Watson. Young, dynamic individual that is really, really strong in the organizing area. He has worked with everyone from Obama to Elizabeth Warren. So his organization skills are impeccable. What he does is he pulls together the different organizations. Okay. We work with the Divine Nine. We work with the League of Women Voters. We work with the NAACP. We work with Unity Partnership. We work with all organizations that, again, have permanent issues that we have. We see voting as a three-legged school, as a three-legged stool. You start with your registration, but then you have to have education. Then you have to have mobilization. Hmm. And without those, without any one of those, your stool is going to fall over. That's what happened with the rise of Trump. There was no voter education. That piece was missing. So people voted with their instincts and their heart. The same people that voted for Obama turns around and votes for Trump. Where was the education piece? I said that up front, early, I saw Trump's rise as nothing more than a math equation. And I was pretty right. 30% of this country's racist. There's nothing we're going to be able to do about it. That's just where they are. Then you take another 7% and they're politically illiterate. They only watch Fox News or whatever it is, and they watch conservative talk, and that's where they're built in. It's baked into the mix. So now you're at 37%. Then there's probably another 7% that's probably completely illiterate. They just are. There's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. So you look at that, that's 44%. If you notice, it never goes up, never goes down. Maybe a point here, point there, but that's where he is. Now, he lives in that area, and he says to himself, that is never going to change. So you would think the math would give your opponent 56%. Well, he doesn't think like that. His mind says, I don't care if you vote for me. I just got to make you hate my opponent enough to not vote for them, not show up, or vote for someone else. So if I can peel off 10%, of that 56%, now it's 46-44. And I can steal another 2%. Or I can, you know, through voter suppression and other tactics, you know, now guess what? I win the popular vote, but strategically, I've won the Electoral College and I'm president.
Okay. Well, Mike, I'll tell you this. I've never been good at math, but I have been pretty good at talking. And what I don't understand is, again, you had said some of these were the same who had voted for Obama. So what changed? Was it the political discourse? Was it the feeling of disenfranchisement that perhaps they saw in there? Or was it just, like you said, echo chambers and potentially racism? Because at the same time, these were people who had thought differently in the past, according to the math, unless I'm totally not following the math.
Well, what you have to do is you have this whole philosophy of grievance politics. You know, you're in your place not because you want to be there, but some other group is the cause of your trouble. It's the blacks. It's the Mexicans. They're rapists. It's old people. It's Social Security. Someone other than yourself is the cause of all your problems. But I have the solution.
If you don't mind, we want to take another call on because we got Brother Clyde. We're not going to bring Clyde on. Right, we're going to bring Clyde on after the other call. They've been waiting for a while. Who we got there from Evanston? Somebody calling in from Evanston. Who is Harold?
Harold, you're on with T.O. Hardeman, Roz's City Can Against the Grain. I don't think
they're on the line. Okay, let's get Clyde back on. Clyde has a question for you there. Mr. Clyde McLemore. Clyde?
Yeah, I'm here, T.O.
Okay, I want to get you back on. I know we got a few calls. You had a question for brother from the NAACP. Break it down, Clyde.
Yeah, DuPage County, because I'm the Black Lives Matter regional director for the northwestern part of Illinois.
It's a pleasure.
I'm up there in I've been up there in Joliet. I helped them start their chapter. Now, the Eric Laurie case where the police choked a man to death and stuck a stick down his mouth. Where was the NAACPD? And I hear you talk about these preachers, these churches. I've been up there. Ain't none of them been out there.
So you answered the question, I guess. Okay.
So the question is, where is the NAACP?
I didn't even know. I didn't even know DuPage County even had the NAACP because they're nowhere. Just 2 weeks ago, y'all just had another man that was killed by the police.
And you know what?
In Joliet.
And that is something that we'll come back to. We got to hit this commercial break, but
commercial,
we are going
we'll
to come back. Come back and talk about it.
Then we'll get Brother Harold on as well, because he tried to get him on. He didn't. Okay.
Are you interested in being one of the first participants in a COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial in Chicago? Affinity Health is currently seeking healthy volunteers who may be eligible for a COVID-19 investigational vaccine study. This will take place at the Loretto Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. We are looking for people who work as teachers, factory workers, retail workers, or anyone exposed to many people during their workday. Visit ChicagoCOVIDvaccine.com or call 877-L-TRIALS to learn more. That's 877-587-4257. Founded by award-winning acoustical architect Timothy Pickett in 1999, Encompass AV is one of the most respected audiovisual and acoustical design firms in Chicago. Encompass AV and its staff of 20 highly trained field engineers provide custom-designed AV, low-voltage, network, and security systems. Since inception, Encompass AV has worked closely with all levels of business, from single proprietors to enterprise and Fortune 500 multinationals. You can find Encompass at EncompassAV.com. Reach out today for a free estimate. Ever wonder about the story behind the story? Who are the people you watch delivering the news, filming the scenes, and putting pen to paper to tell the story you read in your morning paper? Tune in to Media Essential Workers on Facebook and YouTube to find out. With constant changes in the Chicago media landscape, one reliable source keeps track of the people bringing you the stories. Media Essential Workers, the premier live stream telling the story of the storytellers. Sunday nights at 7. Like, subscribe, and follow Media Essential Workers to find out about special shows during the week. Hosted by Raza Siddiqui, Media Essential Workers gets the story of the storytellers.
You're on Against the Grain with Raza Siddiqui and Tio Hardiman. Going against the grain means getting those important questions out there, sometimes those challenging questions, Clyde. We hit you up right before the commercial break. Real quick, in one sentence, what was your question again before we get a response to it?
You know, where was the NAACP of DuPage County when all the shooting and the killings and black people in Joliet?
NAACP is out there when it needs to be out there, or is it? Where were you with this? It's just an answer to Clyde. Mike, what do you got?
Okay, so first of all, NAACP has very defined territories and organizations. We in DuPage County, we cover Will County, Kane County, DuPage, and Kendall. What we don't do is move over into someone else's organization's chapter without their permission. Joliet has its own membership and chapter. So that's the first thing. The second thing I always ask is, I get people to say, where's the NAACP? So I have to ask you as a brother, are you a member of the NAACP?
No, I'm not. I'm a member of Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
I can't be
okay.
Part of anything that said it ain't colored.
Okay. So,
we ain't colored no more.
So where I'm going with that is, we get calls all the time, and we hear people say, where was the NAACP? And there's organizations that are very fine organizations, like Black Lives Matter. We support Black Lives Matter. We don't have an issue with Black Lives Matter. What we have is an organization with a 111-year history that we have a constitution and bylaws. We have an organizational structure. We have legal defense funds, and we're active in the communities that we operate in. We have 21 standing communities. So when you start to think about what the NAACP does, we're active in the school structures, trying to make sure that there's equal education, equal housing, equal voting rights.
You just said you've been there over 100 years, right?
In DuPage County, we've been there 50 years.
50 years in DuPage, okay.
50 years. But our school systems are still down. Our housing is still at the worst. So what I'm saying is, when do we go out there and demand our rights? See, most of all, most chapters of NAACP, where we see it, is going to these churches, y'all getting these monies, y'all, they 501c3 pimps. And we're no longer tolerating that. We got a new generation out here now.
Clyde, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, out of curiosity, how well or how often do you guys, in terms of groups, work together, reach out or do these joint coalitions where you have similar interests, where you can work together? Because isn't, again, more power in this collective, in this coalition, or do you see yourself as the antithesis of NAACP?
If we unite as a people, we could come together. But the thing of it is, everybody is out trying to be a 501c3 pimp. It's all Black Death is big money right now. Everybody is getting paid, and nobody is trying to stop it. That's what got me. I'm fired up on it because nobody is trying to stop it. Everybody, I mean, you just heard the NAACP say they've been there 50 years. But we just had, right 2 months ago, Eric Laurie, where the police stuck a stick down his throat and killed him.
So, yeah, Brother Clyde, let me say this to you real quick, because we got another caller coming on. Our time is kind of winding down. I plan to connect you with the NAACP, but I got somebody on my Facebook saying, Teron Moore, saying they have community advocates in Joliet. And I believe the NAACP wouldn't have a problem just, you know, reaching out, connecting one way or another, Clyde, up there in DuPage County. So let's try to work it together now, because it's all about collaboration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we got to unite in order for it to happen.
Yes, indeed. And just hang in there, Clyde. Don't go nowhere. We're going to bring on Brother Harold from Everson. We tried to get him on earlier because we want to definitely get our callers in as long as we can.
And I will give him my contact information.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. We do when you get back on the air. Harold, you're on the line. You're on the air, Harold.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
I had a question about your opinion on anti-blackness within immigrant communities and what we could do to improve that. We've had a number of people who may come into the country, but they assimilate and assume the identity of, say, their white counterparts who may stay in Schaumburg or Naperville. How do we address that?
You said that with the immigrant community. Break that down for me again.
Sir.
Just ask me one more time. Then I'll let Brother Childress, you can probably address that a little bit if you want to. What's that question again, Harold?
So
I'm trying to understand it.
I'll explain. I wanted to know your opinion about anti-blackness within the immigrant community. And when I say immigrant, I'm talking about maybe second generation people who have had an opportunity to assimilate into American society, but they may assume the identity of their suburban neighbor. So if they are an immigrant, they may move to Naperville or Schaumburg and assume the identity of their Trump-supporting neighbor. So how do we address that?
I'll let you handle that there, because you say anti-blackness. That's why I want to hang on there. Go ahead.
Tio, I was just going to say, I know we've had this discussion before too about some of the business owners who come into the communities and how they don't often assimilate to become part of the community, right? That it becomes almost like a standoffish type of relationship. And I think that's kind of like the question we're a little bit alluding to. I know we've had this discussion.
But the bottom line in the black community, I say this now, I'll be straight up with everybody. You know, African American people must unify. It's mandatory that we unify. Nobody could come to our community and open up businesses anywhere if we were unified. We would, you know, own and operate all the businesses, at least 90% of them. That's what Brother Childress was talking about during the riots. You know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, one of the strongest, vibrant, you know, like economically vibrant communities that black people had ever designed or created, okay? But you know the history of the race riots and all that kind of stuff. But the point I'm making, now his question about blackness and all that, I understand where he's coming from to a degree, but you know, a lot of African-American people, they want to move out of the city. They want to move to like middle-class America. You know, that doesn't mean they're going to lose their blackness. It's just sometimes people just don't, they tired of all the mess. That's why we lost over 180,000 African-American people who have moved out of Chicago from the South and West Side over the last 15 years. Gun violence aside, being taxed out of the bracket and all that stuff. But I want you to get a chance to respond too, if you don't mind, bro. So you kind of understand the question he's talking.
I guess one of the questions too, because again, I'm an Indian American. I was born in this country. My parents were immigrants. And I think the heart of the matter of this question is, how do you get people like myself, people who are the children of immigrants, to realize that, hey, there's a struggle here that we need to either work together or realize that we're not going to come together? How do you reach out to that segment of the population who very potentially could be allies for what you guys are trying to do and realize, hey, this struggle is not so independent and we're kind of working together?
Well, first, when I became president of our chapter, there was three goals that I really wanted to hit. The first goal and the most important goal was to become more diverse, because the perception around the country is that the NAACP is a black organization. I've had people walk up to me, Indian Americans, Muslim Americans, Hispanics, and literally say, I like everything that you stand for with the NAACP, and if I was black, I would join the organization. And I kind of chuckle at that, but I want to make sure, and then I explain it to them. You know, first of all, you know, people have said we should change the NAACP to the NAABP.
Oh, yeah.
But that is not what we stand for. Understand, it's not a black organization. What it is an organization that stands for civil rights for all people of color. All people of color. And to be honest with you, white is a color also. You know, if you are on the side of civil rights, voting rights, economic rights, housing rights, then we're in the same fight. The thing that I like to say about racism is racism really is a tool. It's nothing more than a tool used by the rich to keep people divided, keep you divided by race, by religion, by sex, by age. Because once the populations of groups in this country start to realize that we have more in common than we have apart, then we'll start to come together. But as long as the old are fighting the young, the black are fighting the white, the rich are fighting the poor, the Hispanics are fighting everyone else, and everybody's in their corner scrapping, you know, scratching for crumbs, then the top 1 to 2% of this country will continue to make money even in the worst pandemic and the worst economic downturn in centuries. So why is that? Why is that?
And, brother, go ahead, Roger. You know, and I think that's a good place to leave it because we are running out of time. This is one of those topics where people say sometimes you're not a good closer. You don't know how to close. It's because we have invigorating conversations <That's right. laughs> like this that I just can't close out in an hour. So we're going to have you on again, Mike, because this, again, is
it
a discussion.
It would be my pleasure.
We would love to have you. Until then, until next week, you're on with Teo Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui on Against the Grain. Thank you so much to our guest today, Mike Childress with the DuPage NAACP, and we're going to talk to you more coming up. As for now, thank you for joining us, and we hope to talk to you again next week.